We all know that cars mean traffic, errands, and budgets.
But they should also represent freedom and fun. Join us as we work to find everyone a car they'll love. I'm Paul.
I'm Todd. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate. Happy Tuesday to you. Thank you to all of you that actually watched our Seven Seaters episode this past weekend. Very different for us, very different locations. We did full-size SUVs, the Kia Telluride, the Mazda CX-9, and the Honda Pilot. And for those of you that are not able to see it, it will come to Amazon soon. But also, by the way, thank you to those of you that are sending us notes about, I saw it here, some unexpected combination beyond traditional cable. There's sling boxes with DVRs.
Sure, yeah.
There's somebody actually wrote and actually said they found it on the on-demand part of their cable providers, if I got this right. Cable provider has a like a Motor Trend on-demand section
that's not the app. I saw that.
And so it's playing stuff from like the last 48-hour back catalog, and so they're able to find it there because it just aired recently. So you guys keep sending us kind of new and different ways you're finding it to play for you off of cable. Thank you, because all of that helps for audience numbers. That helps with sponsors, which allows me to say, hey, thanks to Covercraft and Griots for being the presenting sponsors of the show. Remember, 10% off of either of those companies' products at the code, just using the code every day. And you guys keep sending us notes about, I just tried this, and this stuff's really good. This is why we're sharing it. Honestly, it's not just because they came to us and said, would you advertise? We went to them and said, we like your stuff. So we're glad you guys like it too.
Yeah, for sure. No, I'm glad you brought that up. And actually, my dad has some friends who have been emailing him and finding the show. They know the show because, you know, of course, my dad talks it up constantly. And
For sure.
They're now emailing him saying, hey, I've really enjoyed the show. And so a little behind the scenes.
Okay, great.
On this particular episode, I don't think you and I have actually ever done this before, but for the SUVs, we didn't actually have them together on camera.
True.
This is a rarity because of scheduling, because the Kia Telluride was actually in Colorado.
At the press launch.
So obviously we didn't have the competitors there.
Yeah.
But that's the difference in scenery. But what I like is it defined each SUV with the scenery.
Yes, we tried very hard to separate them out. Yep.
You know, we made notes about, okay, so when I drive this in a week or two, you know, here's the comparison things that I want to remember. And we'd go back and watch our own, you know, stuff to remember what we said. And
the way the scheduling actually worked is it was an SUV a week.
Yeah.
So they were, if you will, back to back, but they weren't back to back like we normally do, which is we gather all three and we go to the same location.
Actually on camera.
It's very, very interesting.
That's why you don't see them all three on camera.
Yeah, that was the hard part.
Which is usually what we don't do, but for SUVs, because of the nature of them, you know, we have a list of things. We're not driving the seat to seat cornering time. So we felt for this particular episode, it would be fine if we just, you know, okay, here's what the criteria we're looking for.
But it was still easy in the way we got them. You're right, to your point about how they were being used, we were able to get in them after being with them for a period of time, be like, wait, this seat doesn't move nearly as far as the last one did.
Right.
We were able to do that very easily because we just used them as they should be used, which was fun. And the Kia Telluride got used in all kinds of weather to the point that the front collision sensors lost their mind at one point while I was driving through a blizzard. They got completely covered in snow and went, what is going on?
Totally.
So that happened.
It's hilarious. So guys, thanks for watching. We're really looking forward to sharing that with you on Amazon Prime when it does come out.
For sure, a few weeks
from
now.
And Vimeo for all of our listeners around the world. And hello to all of you. I was actually just looking up stats on our analytics finding. I was digging down into cities.
Good.
So,
awesome. Love it.
Honestly, hello to all the Scandinavian countries and Ireland and Japan and Germany and Australia. Hello to all of you guys. And thank you for listening. We love having you along for the ride. We've got a really cool, it's not debates. We have one debate after the break, but we do have car conclusions because you guys have written to us.
Yeah, there's some great
with
ones.
Very good descriptors. Little bit of just kind of an emotional thing for the last one here. I just really loved it and wanted to include that. But
good.
Yeah, thank you guys for writing all these conclusions. We've got to dive in because they're so the stories are so good.
Well, I love the one we're starting with, which is our friend John in Sweden. John wrote us a while back, and we went off on a weird tangent because he talked about listening to the show while he essentially deforests the world. Actually, I think that's terrible. He's cutting down trees. That's his job.
At least his portion of the world.
Exactly, his portion of the world. No tree is safe. So, but we were talking about the fact that how on earth is John able to hear a thing while he's, you know, proactively sawing down trees with huge machinery? And so he gives us this huge description of how he and his dad together. What's the tally here? Hang on, they can deliver. He and his dad together, each working their separate machines, which do separate things. They can deliver 15 tons of lumber in 20 minutes.
That's insane. just to hear that, that is what is written in John's email to us, his follow-up email.
You know what I envision? You remember like the later Matrix movies where they had machines on top of machines just sawing through the world? That's what I'm picturing here.
Well, he sent photos. And by the way, many of you did. Most of you sent photos. It's great. So I'm going to publish them on Instagram for the release date of this podcast. So you can all see what we're talking about here. He posted the two new John Deere Forest machines. And he said they're quite fancy. They've got bulletproof glass. Think about that.
Yeah.
Tree branches coming at you.
Yeah, stuff that's coming at you. It's not bullets, but it needs to defend for it. Yeah, for sure. Yep.
It's got a fridge, a great stereo, a Windows PC with touchscreen, Wi-Fi, climate control, sunshades, and then, you know, the whole thing is semi-automatic. So they just point and grab.
And killer headphones so he can hear the podcast in clarity while outside the world's going,
we were not off base.
No, we weren't. Hilarious. We weren't. But he actually, of course, listened to the car debate. That was episode 394 if you want to hear John's full story. And he was chasing all kinds of things, and he has this old rally Volvo, you may remember, that he has, like,
that's getting posted.
Out.
He's got an action shot of it sideways in a ditch.
Because that's what you want.
Parked in the driveway. So you have to see this Volvo 940. And he says parts are cheap. He says this is actually a thing. Search for Volvo 940 Group H rallying. And he said, you'll see for yourself. Mm-hmm. The parts are plentiful. They're cheap. It's a thing in Sweden. I love it. It's excellent. He says the next car in next class has 300 to 400 horsepower with no turbo from the stock engine, sequential gearbox, and they just go. Love it.
So he's thinking, we all debated about how much he was going to do that, and he really realized in our conversation that he's probably not going to do that as much anymore, okay? Pending marriage, new house, life is changing fast, okay? So he's thinking...
You have to buy a new car and a dog at the same time. You know this, John.
How many life changes can you make? If you just... what is it? Change jobs, move, and get married. Those are the three most stressful things. If you can put them all in 1 year, then you really are packing it all.
Do it in 1 month. Come on.
Yeah, that'll... Yeah. Hair will fall out. Anyway, moving on. So he realizes that he's trying to get more fun stuff. You may remember the whole story. I mean, he has a 135 that he likes, but he wants to drive it more. So he's going to put the rally car away for the while. He's going to get the paint protection film on the 135 and drive it a lot. He has an old pickup that just is his workhorse. It stays. But the key thing is all of our conversation is helping the fact that his fiance's Skoda is now gone. And due to us, he's kind of shopping for her, which I think is hysterical.
All right. John, thank you so much for writing. We're really loving the photos and the updates and loving that you're just hanging out, listening to the podcast while you destroy the forest around your property. It's excellent.
They have orders for actual trees. He's not out there willy-nilly, by the way. These are trees in need of things. Yeah.
Unless all the stress comes down to a head and he just has to jump in the tractor and go destroy
it. This is when you don't want to be John's neighbor. If you get John angry, your house is in danger. I can imagine the amount of destruction that's possible there.
Anyway, John cleared a new rally stage on my property. He must be angry. Let's go talk to him. Bring him a pie or something.
The Volvo's out. Look out.
All right. From episode 309, this was an exotic for a graffiti artist, our super creative friend, Andrew Horner. He is with Color Cartel on Instagram.
He is Color Cartel. Yeah,
and
yeah.
He wrote to us and said he bought a Lotus Elise.
I love this. And there's been photos of it. You guys haven't seen this, but he's been updating us now and then, Andrew has, with little photos of the Lotus in various places. So one of my favorite things about this is he said, whatever he bought, he said he wanted it to seem exotic because he shows up and he's the artist and he shows up and he wants it to be like, oh, cool, you're an artist and you drive that car. And I mean, this is like a thing. You make a good living and all that kind of stuff. But after driving a bunch of stuff and thinking about a bunch of stuff, he just said, I don't want to go from an $8,000 car to super exotic.
Sure.
And
he
realized that Elise was kind of a sweet spot. And hey, guess what? Andrew, I think the exact same way about it. I mean, it's a car that looks really expensive and really wasn't. So you almost had a good budgetary thought. I mean, it's us and cars, so not really.
A good
but
budgetary
almost.
Thought means, did you buy the car? You didn't get a deal.
But at the same time, he's got this Lotus for now, and then he's actually taken on some track days at COTA outside Austin. And he's realized his comment about maybe occasional tracking might become regular tracking because he's got a Lotus Elise at Access Dakota.
Totally. Well, you recommended an Evora, which he still is thinking about, as a matter of fact. And you're right. He didn't want the full exotic, and that's why you love your Elise so much, because it's exotic and it catches people's eyes, but it's not the exotic budget. It's not the exotic price.
No, not at all, which is the reason that I own it. Let's be honest.
All right. So he's not opposed to going more in the future. You know, he's had the GTI, now the Elise, and he's thinking R8 or Gallardo in the future, and I had a GTS on the list and a Viper ACR, and then, you know, the new NSX and a Huracan after that. But I mm-hmm. love that you're mm-hmm. in this and experiencing it now, and you're experiencing yeah. that car on a track, because that's where I want to have an Elise.
I hear you.
Any
hear
track.
It's
bring
a,
the
it's
track.
It's a phenomenal track car.
The track that John carves experience. Through Sweden.
Exactly. Hey, we're merging things.
I
like
care.
This. I like this. John's going to carve us a crazy rally stage in Sweden. And I'm going to go into the ditch real quick. Now we do need to rally an Elise.
Uh-huh.
Now we need to make a rally build of the Elise. This is just for the
John
laugh.
Will clear
Let's be
a path.
Honest. John will clear a path. We'll go knobby tire rally an Elise for the video. Let's be honest, because that'll be a YouTube hit. And then, you know, we'll never use it again.
Andrew, yeah. I have a challenge for you. You remember the art cars, the BMW art cars from the 70s and 80s?
Yeah.
Those always intrigued me because I love the creativity. I think Keith Haring did one. I think recently Jeff Koons did one. So my challenge to you is maybe do that, but do it with the paint, the film. Not,
oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Not paint itself, but just with, you know, take a page from, what's the pro skier, John?
I know what you mean.
Well, I forget his last name.
You know what? Actually, to Andrew...
He's also Swedish.
To Andrew's...
John Olsen.
Yes. To Andrew's talents, what if he got a paint protection film that's clear, and then now he's not really painting the car,
and painted over
the
film?
He actually paints his own film.
I like that. I like that. And then somehow you raffle that, or it's, you know, it becomes a write-off, you know?
Yeah. Crazy ideas we're having here.
I mean, you're first, you got to design your own racing livery for the track
Why
days that you
not?
Do. That's where you start.
Yes.
And then that
yes.
lasts for
Love
3 months.
It.
And then you wash that off or peel it off, and then you start anew with a new thing. And then
I mean,
you go into the art car
Maybe
thing.
He needs to do, and I don't know what is best for you for a base, Andrew. I have no idea. It's your talent, not mine. But, you know, what is like a good base film? Does it need to be like a matte gray? What does it need to be? But wrap your car in whatever is a good base for you, and then you paint on top of it. And then when that's done, you peel that off.
Sure. I mean, it doesn't have to be white necessarily. It doesn't have to be the white canvas.
Whatever he needs it to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be really cool.
I like that. All right, Andrew, thanks for writing in. Really appreciate it. Enjoy your Elise, man.
That's awesome.
And he's on Coda. So jealous.
Yeah, I am jealous actually right now. In spite of being an Elise owner that's been on track, he's got an Elise and he's on Coda, and that's a pretty good day right there. I agree.
All right, episode 342 from Scott S. in St. Louis, Missouri. He is the optometrist we debated for. And the main issue, if you remember and go back and listen to that episode, was his size. He's 6'6", 300 pounds, and he was looking for an F-Type. And among our recommendations was a C7Z06 alongside a 997 Targa, a V8 Vantage, and a GTR.
Yep.
So what he settled on was not the C7. He thought that was the direction he was going because we were debating for a large guy. And he went to test drive it, and his legs weren't even close to fitting. He didn't realize that he was all legs.
Yeah. He thought with his description it wasn't going to be about legs. It was all about legs in the C7. The C7 was completely out. While he was driving around, he drove the Mustang GT350, which we've talked to a lot of people. And he liked it. He almost fit well, but he was on the same lot, so he got in a brand new 2019 Mustang GT, just the Mustang GT,
just
not the GT350.
Kicks, as you do.
And he realized, I fit better in here than I do in the GT350. And the way he drives is not screaming at the top of the RPM, so he started to go, okay, I fit better in the GT, and I'm not going to really use what the engine is great at in the GT350. And I'm also saving money. Weird when that happens. So guess where this is going? He bought himself a Mustang GT with the track pack and Magna Ride, and he is ecstatic.
He says what he can't thank us for is how you have warped his mind into buying the Orange Fury paint.
That is great news. There's I mean, you are welcome, honestly, Scott. That's exactly how it should go.
Well, this does not mean that the Mustang GT is best for all large people. That is not the point. It is he found what's best for him because he's all legs. And sometimes if you're all torso or, you know, just kind of depends on your body type. But I'm glad, Scott, that you didn't get anything we recommended, but you still used kind of our thinking and found what worked for you.
And it's interesting to hear his progression of getting in things as a big guy and figuring out just there in the Mustang lineup, the differences he discovered. That's kind of fascinating to hear.
Yeah, it is.
You know? Yeah.
It is. Pretty cool. Scott, thanks for writing. Really appreciate it. Enjoy that GT, and glad you're, you know, experiencing burnouts hopefully now.
Let's hope so.
Tire
budget? Yeah,
back tires? All right. Episode 248, Hoi Nguyen in Portland, Oregon, writes to us that he had that 2002 NSX. And we were debating about this car. Should he keep it?
Yeah.
Should he not?
Yeah.
And he still owns it. And then after hearing us recommend the Jaguar F-Type to others, he told his wife that they should replace her Mercedes. And so, long story short, in about a week after listening, he went ahead and replaced the E350 with a 2015 Jaguar F-Type S in black amethyst.
I love it. The photos are gorgeous.
Yeah, they are. He said he went to Freeman Motors there. He says, by the way, is a Lotus dealer in the Portland metro area.
Good to know. I'll make a note. Yeah, I'll make a note.
And he bought it without his wife even seeing it. Fortunately, she likes it. Whew.
She likes it. She likes the exhaust pops and the personality. And they took it. The two of them took it on a road trip to Lake Tahoe. And he was just like, this car's even better than you guys said it was. He's ecstatic about it. She's ecstatic about it. He's now become like the great prophet of the F-Type to all of his friends. He's a huge fan.
The great F-Type evangelist.
Exactly right. Love exactly it. Right. So I think it's great that he's out there. I love that you and your wife both like it. He said when he was driving around things, he did drive the Lotus Evora. I can't imagine who recommended that. He drove the Lotus Evora 400, and he said, yes, that's a car at some point in his future. But what I like here is that we talked about that NSX, and we debated up and down, should he get rid of it? And how what an icon it is.
Yeah.
And it kind of helped him go, no, I need to keep this car. But then the discussions of the F-Type has now got his wife into something they both love. I love that. That's amazing.
What I want to know is where the keys are stored on a nightly basis. And then how...
Is there an argument in the morning?
Do you sign them out? Do you have an app that signs out the keys? Like,
there's a clipboard.
I was gonna drive it today you got me. Like, why are you leaving at 6 a.m.? Oh.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not even dressed yet and you've got the keys. Darn it.
She's out the door.
That's funny.
Well, yeah, many happy miles in that bad boy. The photos are gorgeous.
Yeah, it's great.
And it looks great next to that Acura. I'll publish these photos on Instagram, like I said, so you can see some really, it's just all the recommendations. Mm-hmm. Recommendation rides is what it's called. So, yeah, thanks for writing in. And then we've got to move to episode 113.
That's way back.
July 2016 is when we debated for Bruce Horn in Northern California. This was a $15,000 Roadster debate.
Yeah.
So, for the past 40 years, Bruce has had a series of very cheap cars, mostly between $200 and $1,000.
Those are almost donation cars.
That makes our $5,000 car discussion look wow, big spender.
You guys are spending money now. Yeah,
stepping out. And now, out of necessity, well, first out of necessity, and then now later on as a point of pride, seeing how he could keep the total cost of ownership way down.
Yeah, big time.
And he's figured out how to wring out all the fun out of these cars over the years, but, you know, they were really not designed to be fun cars to begin with. And then
the fun of a $200 car is it worked to get you somewhere. That's the fun. It's like a little ticker tape parade for you. Yay!
It started. Sweet. Confetti.
Exactly right. It's the low budget version of the Michael Bay driveway. It's the really low budget version.
I like that.
It's just Roman candles at a little confetti sprayer. That's it. You're excited you got off the drive.
It started. Yeah. I'm rolling. That's it. We're good. All right. So he's remembering his 1969 Triumph Spitfire.
Very cool.
Which is what he originally wrote about. And he was just kind of thinking back to this car and all the fun that he had in it. And so he did a lot of thinking. In November 2018, got a 2014 NC third generation Miata with the power retractable hardtop.
That's a really cool car.
And he says this is the perfect car for what he wants right now. This is the daily. So he only has an 11-mile commute up to the Santa Cruz, the mountains in Santa Cruz there, and doing the windy road thing. He's had it with his wife on a road trip already. And he loves the retractable hardtop because it offers security and protection in San Francisco when he wants to park it and just not worry about it. I think that was a really brilliant idea on the part of Mazda. I'm surprised they didn't pursue that or keep that going further. I can understand from a weight perspective, but honestly, I don't know that it offers or adds that much more weight.
Less than 100 pounds. Yeah.
You know, not a buying decision at that point, because then they came out with the RF, which I love.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad they're keeping that one going, to be honest.
To have some sort of hardtop option is great. I'm also going to say it again. Hey, Mazda, what about a full coupe? But that'll never happen. I mean, it's known as a convertible, so I get
it. It's the Pontiac Solstice coupe version of the Miata.
Yes, and the Pontiac Solstice coupe is actually hanging on to its value at around 25, 30 grand. They are great looking, yeah, for sure.
All right, so he flew down to L.A., found the car, drove it on a 5-hour trip back up the highway 101 and the highway 1, and he says that was just
awesome,
amazing.
And he's trying to keep the top down as much as he can. He says he's decided that anywhere between 40 degrees and up, the top's down. 40, and he says maybe 80, 90 degrees when it gets that hot, he'll actually close the top because the air conditioner works, and that's nice. But between 40 and 80, the top's just down. So he's enjoying it immensely. He's actually spent, the first time he spent some real money on a car, and great choice, by the way, man. Really cool.
Yeah, copper red Mica, which he loves. And yeah, that car, under 15, they're even less now.
Yeah, that's a lot of car.
I still think, I mean, they're the biggest cabin of all the Miatas, I feel like. With the amount of leg,
yeah,
and
you and I fit the best in that one. You're right. You fit the best in that one because it's also the largest car.
I've always liked it for that
reason. That's why. That's why. But if you think about it, you know, Bruce is sitting here having bought cars for around $1,000. This is a $15,000 budget. This is the most he's ever spent on a car. And I love the fact that this is where you wound up. And you go on for paragraphs here. It's great. You go on for paragraphs, Bruce, about how you keep finding how it's perfect for what you need right now. You spent real money and you're thrilled. That is ultimately the big thing for us. We know that you're going to blow your budget. Paul knows more than I do. We know that very often we just spend more money, we all do, than we probably should on these cars we love. But if you love it as a result, that monthly payment comes in and you just go, yeah, absolutely. That car's awesome.
Love it. Well, then this last one to wrap up here is not attached to any particular episode.
True.
But the email that we originally got was from Nate Allen. He's out in Birmingham, Alabama. And he wrote to us with a story that just... Yeah, it's about family. Let's put it this way.
Yeah.
So a year and a half ago, his father was diagnosed with an acute myeloid leukemia. And he said he passed away from a cold because of his compromised immune system in January of 2018.
Wow.
A couple weeks after his dad's passing, his brother, his stepmother, and he met at the house with a guy from the bank to discuss his will. And he was stunned to learn that his dad had left the three of them a fortune, left to be split three ways.
Unbelievable.
Which meant that Nate went from living on a budget of $2,000 a month to over $20,000 a month.
There's a bit of a change.
Unexpected.
There. Yeah.
And the reason that his dad had never told us this is because he didn't want them sitting around waiting for any inheritance, and that was never the point.
Wow.
It surprised them all. But for Nate, he's had back problems, he's had surgery, he had to drop out of college back in 05. He's had his own health problems going on, and he's always been in a car since he was 10 years old. He said, I never had a career path, but he knew one day he wanted to own an exotic, but never thought that would ever happen to him. Imagine your own situation. You're just, I love cars. How can I ever, I'll just have to relegate it to enjoying car magazines and videos and, you know, just looking at them on the showroom floor,
going
to car shows and looking at them. Never did Nate ever think that he would be able to experience it for himself. And I love what you've got. So the story goes here. He was writing to us trying to decide which car he'd get because he thought, all right, I want an exotic. If I'm going to have this income, this unexpected, I didn't see it coming. I had no idea.
And I'm a car person and I can get an exotic. I'm going to go get an exotic.
So interestingly, he thought at the time he was a 987.2 Cayman owner. Great car. Loved it. Car enthusiast.
And we've talked before. You can get those cars. They sound really exotic. They seem really exotic. $25,000
Yeah.
That's not an overly expensive car. It looks really nice. Now we're shopping in a totally different area. So Nate wanders his way into you see where this story is going. Ferrari of Atlanta.
Well, he had actually bought a McLaren 600LT, the long tail. He drove around for 4 hours before acknowledging he made a big mistake. He said it was a brilliant track car, blindingly fast, beautiful doors, but entirely uncomfortable and impractical, especially think about Nate's back.
Yes.
Okay.
See, that's the key thing here is that Nate's got to be in a car that actually he can sit in and it feels nice, which is a bit of a challenge.
So the next day, Ferrari of Atlanta. He traded it for a 2018 Ferrari 488 GTB. Wow.
Spider convertible, 800 miles. And
brand new, gorgeous.
Going, you've got to be kidding.
He said the Ferrari's covered full warranty until 2027, so anything that goes wrong is fully covered. Routine maintenance, any wear and tear is covered until 2025. And he said, yeah, modern Ferraris are reliable and they're worthy of being a true daily driver. And like you and I have talked about forever, if you drive a Ferrari every day, well, you're an everyday driver. If you
of
drive
course.
A McLaren, if you have from the lowest end to the highest end,
for sure.
And I think the the best part about this story is that whenever somebody asks Nate about his car, first of all, he can say, well, let me tell you about my dad.
That's a good point. That's
let me tell you about the generosity and the thing I never saw coming.
Sure.
And so therefore,
sure. That's interesting. Good point.
A reminder that you don't know the person's story in that exotic car. We want to think, you're driving a Ferrari, you snotty so-and-so.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's the case, but you never know the story. And Nate, what I love is that anytime somebody asks you, you have this background, you've got this story
that's
to say.
Point.
Actually, every time I look at it or even drive it, I think of my dad.
That's cool.
Let me tell you about
my dad.
That's
a very interesting point.
And then you'll learn about the Ferrari.
Yeah.
That's where it hit home for me.
Yeah, and you're right. That is a great point. And there's a real story of family in here that's really, really cool. And Nate, we appreciate the whole breakdown because, you know, kind of like you, when you first sent this email, we were like, what is this story? And it's been amazing to kind of hear the progression. I'm glad we can finally share it. It's very cool.
I mean, rarely we get stories about, hey guys, I'm shopping in the 200,000 range or 300,000 range. And we think, holy moly, I can't even think like that.
It is weird. It's a very different gear for us to be in and be like, well, yeah, let's shop like that because that's not most of us.
Right,
it will never
be
most of us. But if you have the capability, what I like is the fact that we're still talking about that right here on this show.
Mm-hmm.
We have mm-hmm. – I love the juxtaposition here, okay? You know, right above Nate, we're talking about Bruce with his $15,000 Roadster. That's the most – for him, that is an exotic car.
Yes.
So I like that in both cases, the commonality here is I can't believe what I get to drive. That's exactly what we're going for right there.
Nate, thanks for riding. Really appreciate it. Enjoy that car. Put a ton of miles on that thing.
Just drive
it and enjoy. Really appreciate it. And for all of you listening, if you've got your own debate that we covered or a story that inspired you from listening to the podcast and we didn't get a chance to cover your debate, write to us. We'd love to hear this and love to feature it on the podcast. We're sorry we can't get to all of them. But it's fun to hear what this community is doing and thinking differently. And it doesn't matter the budget range. Obviously, we try to find
we've covered the gamut just in this, for sure, yeah.
But in a wider sense, it doesn't matter because the feeling is the same.
Yeah.
And the car community
I agree with
is
that.
The same.
Hopefully.
But yeah, I'd write to us with your own debates, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com as well. And we hope to cover those in a future episode.
We're often asked how we find the cars we recommend because we do a lot of research for the show. Local or nationwide, our searches start with our friends at Auto Tempest. Instead of searching each car site separately, you can enter your parameters into Auto Tempest one time and search them all at once.
You can see results from Cars.com, Cars Direct, eBay, and more, or you can jump to AutoTrader and CarGurus without entering anything new. You can even search all of Craigslist nationwide. You know how hard it is to search Craigslist all at once? You can with AutoTempest.
AutoTempest can help you find your next new or used car if there's a dozen in your neighborhood or two in the entire country. Plus, the folks at AutoTempest actually do listen to this very podcast right along with you, and they're always looking for ways to refine the site to make it better. They already have research tools, buyer and seller guides, and are listening to what features users want.
So if we give you drive homework, or you're chasing your dream car, or you're just looking to feed the disease, AutoTempest.com is the place to start. Heck, I was on it an hour ago.
Summer's here, and with that comes sunshine and blistering hot car interiors. I know that leather seat seemed like a great idea at the time, until you scalded your legs.
All you need is a custom sunscreen from Covercraft. These foldable sunscreens fit perfectly in the windshield of your car, and they keep your car a lot cooler while you're off enjoying the sunshine or whatever you're doing. I have used these for years, and I'm telling you, I swear by them.
These custom sunscreens from Covercraft are available in a whole range of colors, and they're a simple, affordable way for you to keep your car cooler all summer long and protected from damaging UV rays all year long.
We swear by our custom sunscreens from Covercraft. It's one of our favorite car accessories. And remember, you can get 10% off your car sunscreen by using the code EVERYDAY right now at covercraft.com, or you can follow the link from our sponsors page.
So now we're going to have a more traditional car debate. Instead of just doing updates, we're going to actually have a car debate here. We've got Joshua writing to us from the Northeast, and he's saying, can somebody please give him permission to buy a German luxury car? All of his friends, and I have a brief rant.
Okay,
I have a
good.
Brief rant.
Good.
All of his friends are essentially saying, why on earth would you do this? They're expensive. They're unreliable. This is not an undeserved reputation. Okay. You take your Honda Accord that you've never done anything to. Nobody ever bothered to tell you it needed an oil change. And 150,000 miles later, when you put on the second set of tires because the first round is bald, you realize maybe I should get rid of this. And you buy something German that now is a thoroughbred and needs stuff. And you're like, this car needs stuff all the time. Cars need stuff all the time.
Sure.
It's just
sure.
Some of them run in spite of you. And where I'm going on my rant here real quickly is we have been getting emails about Car and Driver and the Alfa Giulia.
Yes. Okay. All right. This is fun.
So I have to go down really briefly. Joshua, I swear we're going to get to you, but I have to go down this road very briefly. Car and Driver, like most auto magazines, they do big long-term tests. Mm-hmm. They got one of the very first Quadrifoglios, and it has been a money and reliability money pit. It has just been a constant hassle. So 40,000 miles later, their breakdown of the car was, love to drive it when we get to drive it, essentially.
Right, right.
Unfortunately, this has become the Bible for Giulias. This has become the only thing that is true of Giulias. So I'm going to go on a tangent real quick. I'm pretty sure it was Car and Driver. I didn't look this up. I should have. I'm pretty sure it was Car and Driver that a few years ago when the C7 Corvette came out, they got one of the first ones, and it was a money pit. And they ended up with an engine replacement.
I do recall that.
Not like we need to do some work. No, engine number 2 during their 40,000 miles. Now, my point here is we've driven the C7 many times. We've talked that up many times. Many people we own have bought new ones, used ones, drive them every day, all this kind of stuff. Clearly, the C7 is not a do not buy it, will blow up its engine car. Mm-hmm, but that was what happened to Car and Driver. So my point here is I am not denying their issues with the Giulia. Clearly they happened, and they bought an early one, and we know from the press cars, half the fleet of press cars yeah. worked fine, and the other half, they couldn't get them to start sometimes. I mean...
Without knowing why.
Yes. Like, I mean, the actual press folks couldn't get it to start. Now, the ones we always had were great, but my point here is, just because Car and Driver had this problem doesn't make all of those cars the same. In the same way, the C7 with an engine swap doesn't make all those cars the same. I am trying to land the plane here, I swear.
Okay, all right.
German cars have a reputation for breaking and costing a lot because it's well-deserved. But it doesn't mean avoid all of them because they will all be terrible money pits.
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, there's plenty of research out there. There's plenty of the J.D. Power best initial quality. I've always jabbed at them for that because it's new. Of course it has best initial quality.
It has quality right now.
It just rolled off the assembly line. What are you talking about?
Currently has quality.
I don't get that one. But yeah, there's car stereotypes, and mm-hmm. in some cases they're proliferated. Mm-hmm. They're not always true, and so we always take it with a grain of salt, and we always recommend to all of you listening that you do your own research when we're recommending things.
Sure.
If you disagree, that's totally fine. And
yeah.
you know, whatever you come across. But we're always going after the driving experience. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I have maintained for a while now that I think it's the headspace of I drive the toaster that works. I drive mm-hmm. the toilet, the thing that just, it works.
Yeah. If your car's an appliance, it needs to do nothing but run. Its number one goal is to run, and everything else is secondary or even tertiary. And it's just a
yes.
discussion of, I don't care about anything else. It needs to get good gas mileage and run.
And so that headspace you bring with you to the next car, mm-hmm. whatever that is.
Yeah.
And it'll be different. It'll be a different car company, manufacturer, built elsewhere on the planet. And those things no longer apply. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to break out of that mindset. It's hard to think, really? I have to think about timing belts and, you know, all these various things that I need to just pay attention to?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's part of owning a machine that you drive hard.
Yeah.
And so when it comes to German cars... Do they need more love and tender loving care and maintenance, all that stuff? Well, yeah, they do. But think about, in general, as a big generality, they're extracting more out of, not less, but out of the car, out of the model. Now, you could argue the same thing for some hot Japanese models, too, and some hot American cars, too.
Yeah.
But in general, they're extracting a whole lot more performance. They're engineering it more thoroughly or, you know, wanting it to really... do a thing better, less concerned about 20 years from now, for brakes.
It comes from the factory more concerned with being focused on a sporting intent than this just needs to run indefinitely.
It's
for better and for worse. Honestly.
Absolutely. And credit to all manufacturers that try to walk that balance and say, mm-hmm. you know what, I want this car to be just as good now, you know, 20 years from now. A Nissan GTR is a great example of that. Thoroughly well engineered. Mm-hmm. I believe they're assembled in clean rooms. At least the engines are. Mm-hmm. And we just want it to be a reliable run, but uber high performance. That's a walk in the fine line and forth.
Every person I've known that has owned one and driven it hard has found it to be a voracious monster eating their wallet.
Yes.
It's just tires, oil changes. It's just, it always is tapping on their shoulder going, by the way, I need this now.
Higher tolerances.
You have to feed the beast.
In the engine mean, wear on parts. And, you know, when you drive a car hard, it gives you that delight, that performance. Mm-hmm. But now I've got to back up and, all right, I've got to take care of it. And I've got to really follow what the manufacturer recommends.
Yeah.
How would you like to be the person at a car company? If you are this, I'd love to hear from you. How would you like to be this person that is figuring out those intervals and working with the engineers to say, all right, well, we believe that that needs to be changed at this interval. Mm-hmm. That's a job.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so caveat over.
Expertise. Yes. Now, so Joshua, so turn in next time when we actually get to your... No, actually, we are going to cover your car debate now.
At this price range, the $15,000 to $30,000 range, he plans to have a Toyota 86 as his second fun car at some point. He lives in the Northeast where
he's not shopping
for
the now is key. He's shopping for the commute car.
Right, not shopping.
So he's saying, I'm not looking for the track fun. This is more commuting.
Yes, for sure. So he lives in the Northeast, gets snow 3 to 4 months out of the year, yes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And he said there's plenty of Toyota Camrys and Avalons and Accords and Kia Sedona SX Limiteds.
Yeah.
He's found several great Acura TLXs, which we have recommended, and a Subaru WRX.
Okay.
But he keeps wondering. His friends keep razzing him. Should I give Germans a chance? Should I give the German cars a chance? The stereotype, he says, of a driver who owns Mercedes or BMW is something he's willing to accept, since there's also stereotypes of Toyota 86 owners or Kia Sedona owners.
Sure.
Stereotypes at every level.
When you see the person behind the wheel. Yeah.
I just actually look forward to the stereotypes that have yet to be defined with all the electric cars coming from Volkswagen. What are those stereotypes going to be?
Yeah.
Look forward to that. All right. So he's
those
saying,
Faraday future drivers.
Oh, man.
Oh, wait. Those don't exist. Side note.
Yeah. Are they still even in business? Anyway. So are German car interiors and ride quality so much better than a nicely equipped Acura TLX that he can look past the reputations as being expensive to maintain? He says, not a fan of SUVs, but would they be a better option for his needs as a daily? Ultimately, Joshua, I think if something strikes you and it speaks to you, then you've got to listen to that. You've got to give it a chance. And that's what this podcast is all about. That's
hopefully
what the show is all about.
Yeah.
If it does speak to you and you can get in, you can afford it, and you can, you know, come in very clear-eyed about here's what the care and feeding of this car is going to take, then wonderful.
Yeah.
This is why we talk about, well, leasing might be for you if you just don't want to worry about that stuff ever. You're going to pay more for it.
Absolutely.
Or,
but you're going to have
I'm willing to accept it.
Yeah. Tolerance is the big thing here. What is your personal tolerance? You get back to these cars that as they have more and more personality, that is almost code for stuff's going to break. where is your tolerance level for I'm okay with the occasional time every now and then my car is needy, and it's needier than the whatever that I owned. And now I have this car and it's needier and I'm okay with it. But for every person, it's different. You have a tipping point where you're just like, now you've just gotten too needy. We're the same way with people in relationships.
That's true. This is a relationship podcast.
Absolutely. You can have that person that you date or marry or whatever, and they are milk toast, but they are reliable. Okay?
Sure.
Or you can have I hate to go with the stereotype, but you have the fiery Italian. Okay, that's the stereotype. I think about that Fiat 500 Abarth commercial you like so much.
My favorite commercial.
You were showing me that commercial recently, so it's on my mind.
Katrina
Mindel.
But my
point is, you have there it is. Yeah. Paul even looked her up. Moving on.
Wow.
But you can have the fiery personality person. Okay, that sometimes you really don't like them, but when it works, it really works. Okay.
Yeah.
You have to find with the person you marry and spend your life with. Where are you on that scale? How much is your tolerance level for madness? Because there's good and bad madness.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with cars. What's the place at which your relationship is getting broken because the thing is needy again?
So to answer your question, Joshua, I do think you should give them a chance. I think you need to identify in that range, there's plenty of commute options. There's plenty of S-classes and E-series and C-classes and 2-series and lots of interesting stuff to go entertain that the commute doesn't have to be boring. It's just, well, it just runs. Mm-hmm. We want to approach commuting that way. And if you're not interested in, you know, dealing with that kind of stuff and it's just, well, every morning just runs. The confetti shoots out again and it started. Yay. If you're just wanting that, but if you're willing, and again, I'm not saying that, well, oh, you got a German car. It's going to break on you. Just budget for another $15,000 a year. No, that's not what I'm saying.
But there will be more maintenance than if you bought your whatever.
You're just
going
to have to change your headspace about it.
For sure,
and just
for sure.
Follow owner's manual. You can't go wrong following the owner's manual. I like to over-maintain and do my oil changes sooner than Porsche
recommends. No one listening is surprised. No one is surprised.
But,
yes.
You know, it's me.
Yeah.
I'm used to that kind of headspace. I'm thinking about the care and feeding of my cars all the time.
Yeah.
So when you're used to that and you start to think, all right, I'm going to entertain it because of the level of satisfaction or how good that car makes you as a driver. Mm-hmm. BMW M3s make people better drivers.
Okay.
Flat out.
Let's hope so.
They just make people better drivers.
Okay.
You can take corners faster than you ever thought possible.
This
you can brake
true.
Harder. You can,
or you can wind up in a ditch sooner if you really do it wrong. I mean, it's not going to fix bad driving, but it's going to give you a new driving. So it's interesting you go there.
I say it tongue in cheek, but you know what I mean.
E90 M3 is on my list.
No kidding.
Why not? Now look, it's got that big V8. This is not going to be
It's thirsty.
It's
not a commute car.
It's thirsty.
But
he doesn't really go into detail about his commute though.
Well, that's true.
It's thirsty, but he needs to commute. And he also said, by the way, side note real quick, Joshua, you said, do I need an SUV? The only reason I think you might not want a sedan is you said you transport your elderly mother now and then. Is she okay getting in and out of a sedan?
That's a big thing, the ride height, for sure.
The ride height, sometimes with elderly parents, grandparents, etc., the ride height of an SUV is easier to get in and more specifically out of than a lower car. If that's not an issue and you can do sedans, I think you really want a sedan. And for $30,000, you can find E90, that is the last gen M3 four-door. We love that car. Mm-hmm. It has a big thirsty V8. The V8 has known issues because every car on the planet has known issues. So make sure you dig into the forums and find what are the things I need to make sure this car doesn't have or has had addressed.
Sure.
By the way, caveat, every car has that thing, but they're fantastic to drive. And they are perfectly wonderful sedans to sit in and drive slowly.
I have driving homework for Joshua.
Do you?
Brand driving homework.
I'm almost in wild card territory with the E90 because I know that is a care and feeding car, but I also know it is a fantastic commuter. We've cross-country driven those things. We've driven them on back roads. We've driven them on tracks. It's a great car for everything, and I think you would thoroughly enjoy it if you just sit down and go, what is my maintenance?
Just be prepared to feel like you're paying for the vacation home monthly payment for your local service station owner.
Well, because your local service station is where you fill up with gas, and that car needs gas.
Contributing to their college fund, their kids' college fund, or their third boat payment, or you're going to feel like, well, I'm paying for your lifestyle.
I have other options as well, but that's kind of, you brought up BMW, thought I'd start there.
I'm saying at the 2-series level of every German car company. Whether it's
interesting. Okay.
Volkswagen,
okay.
Audi.
All right.
And by the way, this will be another topic Tuesday. At some point, Audi does feel like, and they operate like a different car company than Volkswagen. It's not like, even though there is some platform sharing, it's the...
For sure,
When you're at the headquarters, they don't really say, hey, we're like Volkswagen with leather. They actually operate as a different car company.
Audi, Volkswagen in a suit.
Kind of, but not really. So at the 2-series level, so it's the A4, the BMW 2 or 3 series, the Mercedes C-Class, go start driving all these sedans.
Please, they all feel
very different.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
It's quite surprising and quite fun.
Yes. Yes, for sure.
This is my driving homework for you.
Okay,
it's
I like
almost
it. I like it.
Pick the entry-ish level sedan or coupe of all these car companies and go start driving those to see which piques your interest.
Yeah, is the A3 big enough? I'm curious about that
all
one
those
as well.
Things, yeah.
Cheap Phaetons. No, I'm kidding. Don't get a cheap Phaeton.
Run
don't do that.
Away.
Don't
run,
do that.
Don't walk.
But, you know, look, if you want to stay in these are good sedans and I know they're going to run, you mentioned Acura. Pursue the Acura product line. They're overlooked and they're excellent. And pursue Lexus.
Sure.
Drive the IS and the GS. I don't know how big you need it to be. You haven't been clear on that. The IS and GS are both rear-wheel drive, and they are both better to drive than you think.
Okay.
Excellent interiors. You want to talk about reliability. you want to talk about. By the way, there another rant. There seem to be people, how do I put this tactfully, that are watching our ES piece and have decided that the comments we make about the ES is how we feel about Lexi in general. This is not true.
We actually said to the contrary in the piece.
Well, that's a side note. The ES is a car we wish Lexus didn't make because we don't find it redeeming. But we've recommended the IS on this podcast, we've recommended the GS on this podcast, mm-hmm. both of mm-hmm. those in multiple specs.
Mm-hmm.
If you want big, of course you go LS. But both the IS and GS really do have things about them where you can drive them as an enthusiast car. And of course we all know that Lexus is pretty much the king of dealer reliability and service.
If they broke more, they'd have more character and we'd like them more, right?
No, that's not the key thing.
No, that's right.
Just the front-wheel drive boring boxes are not worthwhile.
Exactly, exactly. Joshua, hopefully this is helpful to you because I do think the Germans, the cars, are worth a look because of what they do to your fun, the driving fun, the thing that stirs your soul.
And there's life experience in there. I think you need to drive. I'm going to go one higher than where you were. Definitely drive the Audi A6, A7.
Okay, good.
I think that's the bigger end. I don't think you really want a huge one, but I think that it'd be worth driving the A6, A7 because there's something there. And A6s, early 2000s, unbelievable money pits and never ran. I don't hear that about A6 owners anymore.
It's a very good point.
Our friend Jay here locally has owned multiple A6s and they just run.
They just run. And, you know, our friend Chris, with his wife's Mercedes wagon.
Yeah,
just
run. Absolutely. But our friend Jay's put buy an A6, put 50,000 miles on it, sell it, buy another A6. And by the way, he's buying used ones.
That's true.
So keep that in mind.
If you really want to open the can of worms, Joshua, start talking 80s Maseratis and launches. You know, then you can really say, is it worth it?
Current Maseratis. Look, we're not in the Germans anymore, but let's have some fun.
Jump into social media questions on Facebook. Chris Mazzone has said his dad has an opportunity to buy a GT500. Lovely.
Okay.
But he wants to make sure that they spec it right.
All right.
He dailies an E46 M3, and they would probably drive the GT500 quite a bit.
Like it.
He said the $18,000 track package, is it worth it if he doesn't track it, or would it help hold the value? How about $10,000 painted stripes versus the $1,000 vinyl? When you say spec it right, I come back to this, because if you truly want to spec it right, you go ask the dealer to spec it for you, because you ask, what do you want to resell and make money off later?
Yes.
That's what we'll order.
What's crazy, you say that. What's
Isn't
crazy,
that nuts?
No. You're not too nuts. You don't normally hear this with Mustangs, but we've spoken specifically to Ferrari dealers who will walk their clientele through the options list before they buy, because they, the dealer, are looking out mostly for themselves, but also for the client, for when that client sells the Ferrari, I can sell what, I'll give you a great example. I think it's $2,000 for the shields on the front fenders of your Ferrari.
Yes, the Scuderia shields.
You've seen a Ferrari. You may not have thought about it, but you've seen a Ferrari without those. That's an option. But
man, I don't even look at those and turn my head. Only the ones with the Scuderia shields.
But the Ferrari dealers that we've talked to have talked about how that's an absolute box check, because they can get more money and are more likely to sell the ones. This is ridiculous. But if,
totally.
You're right. This is you're down a great road here. If the thinking here is to resell it later, then your dealer should help you spec it. If it's for you to drive and resale be damned, then
get it how you want.
Yeah. And do you need stripes? I say that. Yeah. I know the history. Somebody right now is hackles up and writing me an angry email because how dare I get a Mustang GT that doesn't have the stripes. I get it. I don't really like the stripes. And this is me. I'm not speccing a GT500. But I'll tell you right now, vinyl or painted, it's not getting stripes.
Chris, I'm telling you, if you want that resale value and concerned about it, talk to the dealer, because the GT500 is a special enough car
and
that it's in
a
category of those Ferraris.
Mm-hmm.
That when that dealer wants to resell it, what do they want to sell? What do they want to see on the showroom floor? And say, I'll order it like that.
And for that, it will need track, pack, and stripes.
Absolutely, it will. So yeah, the price went up, but you're kind of preserving your investment if you're looking at it that way.
If you care. Yeah.
Otherwise, if you're just driving it for yourself, get what you want.
Yeah, for sure.
Spec it up and, you know, crazy, whatever.
Austin asked on Facebook, are there going to be any more motorcycle fast blasts? Yes, there will. Nate is working on those feverishly. He actually lives in the Chicago area, which means he has a shoot season and a don't go outside season. So he is in the middle of shooting stuff. We've got more coming. I know Nate's listening, so how are you, man? And thanks for working on those. Just so you know, Austin, I suspect one of those a quarter will be the minimum. We may have a few more than that, but generally it'll be about one a quarter on those motorcycle fast blasts, so those will continue for sure.
Telling you, kind of like Wisconsin weather. It's 9 months of winter and 3 months of bad sledding.
There you go. There you go. Also, like Derek asked a question. How are you, man? He wrote on Facebook. Instead of a track day for our Atlanta meetup, he said, what about we did a group driving experience at the Porsche Experience of Atlanta?
Great idea.
Now, two thoughts here, Derek.
Done. When are we going? Yeah.
On one level, as exactly as Paul's saying, that sounds phenomenal. But the flip side of it is this. With all of these meetups, we're trying to make it very a la carte and very everybody affordable. That Porsche Experience isn't really... I mean, it gets
suck
expensive.
The joy out of everything.
I know. I'm here bringing reality, and it's sad. I understand. We can all go Eeyore for a minute. So the Porsche Experience. Anyway, but
darn it.
Yeah, we can't do that. So hopefully, when we do something in Atlanta, we'll be able to build a kind of a la carte thing like our Utah meetup, where how much do you, as the person attending, want to spend, and there's still plenty to do. If we put it around the Porsche Experience, I have a feeling that would, by the way, be wildly fun. I'm not taking that away.
Totally,
but the
man.
Price would go way up, and we would have far fewer people. So this is the struggle with all of these meetups.
I'm not seeing a real problem.
You're not struggling. You want to go next week.
There's
I get
no issues. There's two similar questions from Alton Dyer. Best blend of high miles per gallon and fun, also known as the commuter unicorn. And the nearly identical question from Nick Broadley. Commuter unicorn, what is the best combination of miles per gallon and fun?
Commuticorn?
You're all wrong. You're all wrong. It is the supercharged Honda CRZ from HPD,
where
you had to buy the car and get the supercharger installed, and it still gave you a lot of fun. Manual transmission. It had 197 horsepower once you supercharge it, which is the same as a Fiesta ST. They're unicorns. You don't see them.
That's
They're a lot of fun. Commuter unicorn.
I am going to leave you alone with that.
.com.
I remember when you drove that at track day and you would not shut up about it
for
a long time. Unfortunately, it was like a $45,000 car, which is just...
Yeah, but they got to be less than that by now.
Five people bought them and now they're worth 18 grand. You know that's exactly what happened.
Totally.
Yeah.
So go buy them and giggle and have a great time.
I love it. That's very funny. Travels with George on Instagram said, does anyone ever get a good deal on Bring a Trailer or other auction sites?
Not no more.
honestly, I think at this point, when somebody sets a reserve on Bring a Trailer, what seems to be happening most of the time on there is the people are getting a good car. They aren't necessarily getting a good deal. If you want the pristine, awesome version of car X, Bring a Trailer is probably your spot, because what happens is, as you've all seen, the car gets posted and the photos get posted and the info gets posted and the hardcore folks, it's almost like the virtual clipboards come out. The guys that really know these cars are now like inching over the car like ants and going, well, wait, that quarter panel wasn't until the next calendar year. And then why is that door lock wrong? And
do they say it in that voice too?
Maybe. Or maybe they do the Eeyore voice again. But anyway, the point is...
Eeyore voice is only reserved for the Porsche Atlanta driving experience.
We're at Porsche today. We're driving the GT3.
Awful.
Anyway, the point is, you now can have other people, in a weird way, vet the car for you and make sure you got the exactly perfectly spec'd one. That's the benefit of these auctions and these sites. But no, you're not getting a good deal, except for the guy 3 weeks ago that broke my heart.
Oh.
He was selling a 90s Z32 Nissan 300ZX with no reserve. It was twin turbo. It was 6-speed. It had aftermarket stuff on it that I actually liked. It, for some reason, didn't have a reserve. And because it wasn't pristine stock, it had aftermarket wing and wheels and stuff. I think it sold for $10,500.
Golly.
That person got a killer deal on an amazing car because it was very clean. And I saw it after the fact and thought, well, if I knew it was going to go for $10,500, I would have, I don't know, chopped off a limb or something. It'd be $10,500. Because most of the Zs that were in the same category that are selling, like Auto Tempest, if you look them up, they're $15,000.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was...
So there's the unicorns, but in general, did you get a deal? You didn't. But you may have gotten a great car.
And I love that all of you are sending me 928 links, especially the Brand Trail.
Yeah.
Which are killing me.
And they're going up and up and up.
Killing me, Smalls. By the way, I think I've told you this before, that you and I should have the first two sports cars that awakened our desires. You need a 300Z. I need a 928 mm-hmm. in addition to the Phaeton XKR.
Oh, wait, that's got to happen too.
Wait. So we need this plethora.
This is insane. You know what? Side note, the Phaeton XJR thing.
Jetta XL
came up on our Discord. We have a patron and all of our patrons are allowed on our Discord chat. It's actually awesome. Some of the discussions there are awesome.
It's
but
amazing.
It came up on our Discord, and I want to mention this to all of you listening. The discussion was, and I'm literally laying it at you guys' feet as an audience. The discussion was, what if we, Everyday Driver, put up a GoFundMe?
This is crazy.
That was just to raise money to get those two cars and to then do multiple pieces with them. Mm-hmm. There'd probably be a cross-country drive. There'd be a piece related to TV against a more modern, super luxury car. We've thought about what the pieces would be. There'd be a lot of pieces.
The ideas.
The discussion that we've had, the concern we've had, is the outgo for the show to initially buy them. And so the idea came up from our patrons, and thank you guys, by the way. You know who you are that did this. The idea was to create a GoFundMe to raise the money to get those cars. We either obviously raise enough to get them or we don't,
mm-hmm,
okay?
Mm-hmm, right.
But then if you contributed to the GoFundMe, that, and we would create an increment, like let's say $5, whatever, but for every $5 that you contributed, that was one entry into the raffle at the end. So everybody that did the GoFundMe are the people that actually one of you is going to get the car. If that's interesting, hit us up. We want to know on social media and other places. It was a crazy idea that was brought to us, and we're entertaining it because we would like to cover those cars, but we want to be real cautious about
it. It's such a crazy idea.
It is. We want to know you guys' level of interest, and we want to be very careful with it financially because these cars might run or they really might not, but it would be very fun to cover for sure.
I love the idea. All right. Yeah. Please let us know. You know where to write us at. There's a question on Twitter from Benjamin S. He's writing this as a Topic Tuesday, but I'm going to try to answer it as succinctly as I can.
Ooh, I love that challenge.
He had a go-karting event at work with some folks who drive appliances. He found it very difficult to explain the racing line without a pen and paper, instead opting for nomenclature like momentum and apex. He's not sure anything sunk in. What is our take on a verbal explanation?
Go for it. I'm excited about this. Yeah, okay.
My initial thought is having them follow you. Obviously, that's not verbal.
It's not verbal, but it would help. Yeah.
That is... It's very much of a show me and then, you know, mm-hmm. let them do it.
Yeah.
Verbally, I'm having trouble because if you use all the car terminology that we all throw about, mm-hmm. that, you know, yeah. we all know what it is. Honestly, what it has to come down to is cut the corner. People understand when you cut the corner.
Mm.
They go, oh, I'm cutting the corner off. I'm forget apex and momentum. And then the very... top of that corner where you cut it off and you start to turn back in, that's where you've cut the corner off.
Mm.
That's the best thing I can think of.
I've tried to do this with my son. It's very difficult. And what helps, this is not perfect, but what helps is most of the time when you go to a karting place, they have a map marked on the wall. They have a map of the track on the wall.
Yeah.
Use your finger.
Yeah.
And talk about where you need to put the car because...
But use different terminology than, you know... corner exit or track out or
no, it's
apex
gonna it's going to be. I explained it to my son. We use the real terms eventually, but I explained it to my son like trying to flatten the corner, trying to make the uh-huh. corner straight. How uh-huh. straight can you make the corner? So
sure.
you have to turn as little as possible. That's a key thing. People do understand because of driving that you can't go as fast in a corner as you can on a straight. They understand that, which is why most people like to do the I can put my foot to the floor, but do
so they understand wait. This?
No.
Do people understand
this? No, because. Think of all the people that we've driven with who are really fast when you're going down the freeway and you get them near a corner and everybody's really slow, like hazard lights kind of slow. Okay? So people right. understand that corners aren't right. as fast as straights. So things like straightening out the corner or turn as little as possible mm-hmm. and still make the corner, these are things that become universal. But I think you have to trace your finger around that track and be like, you've got your cart here. You need to be here.
Mm-hmm. No, I get that. All right, what are the questions you find on here?
Ed the Sled said he just tried the Griot's Garage wheel cleaner with a simple brush, and he said, how on earth have I not tried this before? He highly recommends it. I love that you tried it. I love that it works. He also made a comment, and this is the only place I don't like this, Ed. You said you bought it at your local AutoZone. You can now start to buy some Griot's products at your local auto parts store.
They are available,
and that's cool. I'm glad that Griot's is growing to that part. This is my only problem. I'd rather you bought it at griots.com with everyday driver code. The everyday code. The reason to use that code is because they are watching how you guys respond to us.
Correct.
And if you buy it at your local auto parts store, that doesn't count.
Well, you also get the 10% off.
You do get the 10% off. Absolutely.
And if you buy enough, it's free shipping anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Yes, that's true. And you get the 10% off, which you didn't get at your auto parts store, and they'll have to ship it to you. I understand you had to wait, and maybe you needed it right now. I get it. But we would appreciate, we're glad that you like the products. I'm thrilled about that. We would appreciate if you would use that everyday code, because then that helps us with them as a sponsor.
So many more good questions that we'll have to save for next time, but there's a last one from me from Day May?
I saw it, yeah.
Sean Q, whose Elise we filmed a couple of years ago now, he said Factory 5 Racing 818s are dancing in his head. I thought that only happened at Christmas time.
No, it's a year-round thing.
It is?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So does he upgrade? Does he essentially upgrade to the 818 by this hole left from the sale of the Elise, the supercharged Elise?
Supercharged Elise, yeah.
If we built an 818, would we go the WX turbo engine or just the naturally aspirated 2.5? Mm-hmm, is it enough for the track punch? I'm thinking, can you leave the build in such a way where you could upgrade to the turbo and add that a little bit later on?
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
So we're always advocates of stepping up, starting it up at a low place where you can wring the most out of that car and understand the dynamics of the car at the low power level.
Yeah, yeah.
Think Spec Racer Ford, 105 horsepower.
Yeah, 105 blistering horsepower in 1,500
Best
pounds.
Thing that ever happened to Ford Escorts. Just tear the engine out of it, throw the rest of the car away.
I've got a use for that engine. That's funny.
I'm saying step up incrementally, and then, should you want to and your driving skills get more out of a turbo later on, you could add it back in. I think that's the way to approach the build.
Honestly, also, while we're talking about 818s, this is something that infests my brain. And
are
I
they
do
dancing
own these.
In your head?
No, they aren't. But here's
sheep
the, here's
jumping
my
over the fence. 818s jumping over the fence.
818s jumping over the fence. But those don't land well when they're airborne. It's
no,
a separate
don't.
Thing. How much do you want to do a build, though? Do you want an 818 or do you want to do a build? If you want to do a build, an 818 is a great place to be. But if you're just curious if an 818 is the more hardcore Elise alternative, why not buy somebody's already built one? They're out there. You can buy already built one somebody's selling for about the price of the kit.
Great questions on here, guys. Fantastic. We've got to end the podcast at this point, but excellent questions. We really appreciate it. Keep writing your questions and your car debates. And keep us updated with stuff you brought.
For sure, for sure.
Really great to hear. And we're looking forward to next time. Cheers, everyone.